The following presentation was recorded at a Christian Light Education workshop. More information at clp.org.
Yes, this is a session on developing levels of reading comprehension. What we'll do is look first at the brown or the tan sheet, whatever color that is, somebody. And we'll look at some skills, reading skills that children should develop. And then, as we have time at the end, we will look at some of the samples. And we won't read them all. You can take that along as a resource and use it. But looking at this sheet first on developing levels of reading comprehension, children do need help to learn to read. Just like I often think of the passage where Philip climbed up in the chariot with the Ethiopian and he said, "Do you understand what you're reading?" And the man said, "How can I except someone helps me?" And he didn't even know who was being talked about here. He said, "Is this prophet talking about himself or somebody else?" Well, if you don't understand that, it's difficult for you to interpret the piece. As children read in school, whether especially in reading class, the stories that they read, many of them are worthwhile to read on their own, or at least they should be, but they don't need to remember them as they do history or science. They're really building skills. They're building skills to think and reason and understand that they will use in the future life. There are many, this can get very, very complicated when you start taking apart reading skills, but just briefly on your outline there, I pointed out three major things to ask when you read something. The first one is what. It's kind of what and so what and now what. So the what is, what does this say? What does the text say? And how do we know that it says what it says? And one of the aspects of that is the details that are actually there in the text, in the story, and also what you can infer from what you've read. And you ought to be able to tell what you've read based on something in the piece, and we'll see that as we look at a sample shortly. But then there's also the so what. Do you ever, children ever wonder, why do we need to read this stuff? Well, in the case of reading class, it's building skills for life. But that is a valid question. So what? What's significant in this piece? How does it help me to understand something more about myself, about other people in the world, about the world around us, about the past? What is there about this piece that helps us to open our eyes in some new way? That's the so what. Some pieces then, there's also a now what. And the now what is, all right, if, since this is a worthwhile piece, how might it affect my life from here on out? Is there something that I should think or understand or appreciate more because of this? I embedded the verse there from James. Some people look in the mirror, or some people look at their watch. Did you ever see somebody look at their watch and then immediately afterward you ask them what time it is? And what do they do when you ask what time it is? What do they do?
Look at their watch again.
They look again, right? And so why did they just look at the watch? Some people, yes, you look in the mirror. Do you really see yourself when you look in the mirror? Or do you just, I guess if everything's okay, you just go on. But anyway, James says that we should, if we read something, we should, at least sometimes, take some instruction from what we read and not just simply go on. The bookworm simply worms his way through a book, and then when he's finished, he worms his way through the next book and the next book and doesn't necessarily digest anything or make it part of his life. And so we'll look at that a bit. Now, on this piece, I have to save time here, I have the story of the Good Samaritan from the Bible here. Well, we won't read that, but let's go right to the back side of this first sheet, where I listed some of the major skills that all students should develop sometime over their years. In fact, most of these you can develop as first graders and on through school. You never get finished working on these skills. And I won't read these all to you, but we'll notice what I do is name the skill, give a short definition of it, and then illustrate how that could be applied in the case of the account of the Good Samaritan. To summarize is to take a selection and, in just a few sentences, get the big picture of what the selection was about, but you must include a few details to really give a feel for what happened. And the ability to summarize requires you to understand the whole piece. You soon find out how well somebody understands something if they try to summarize it. When children need practice, they need to be taught how to summarize. And you can do it by modeling. You can give them a good summary. And it's almost more fun sometimes to give them a poor summary and have them tell you what's poor about it. For example, if I said, in the case of the Good Samaritan, if I said, once there was a man who went down the road to Jericho. As he went, he encountered some thieves. They beat him up and they left him for dead, and eventually somebody helped him. Now, what's wrong with that summary? You tell me.
Didn't address the priest and the Levite.
Mm-hmm. And what was wrong with the beginning of the summary? Yeah.
Specific, a man.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and it almost started retelling the story, and then all of a sudden, just one brief sentence. And if a student would be told to summarize it, and he might start and then think, well, I've talked long enough now, and then he just gives. So a summary has to be something like, it's not hard. A traveler on the road to Jericho was robbed and left for dead. A priest, a Levite, passed by without helping, but finally a Samaritan passerby helped him. That gives you the picture, and it doesn't just say some people. Summaries, and children can do this at a relatively young age. What about it? Who teaches first grade here? Is it possible for a first grader to, now you might not use the term, you might not call it summarize, but can a first grader give you in a few sentences a story? Is that possible? You think? Well, let's look at a couple other ones. Let's look at number 4, a main idea. Whether it's a paragraph or whether it's a story, the main idea is the gist of it, the main point of that piece, as opposed to just a title, as opposed to just a detail. And one of the ways to have children practice picking out the main idea is to give a title for a paragraph. Name this paragraph. That's similar to, it's actually tougher than summarizing, because now you've got to name it. Did you ever, when you write a composition or a creative writing piece, sometimes one of the hardest things to do is come up with a title, isn't it? Why is it so hard to get a good title? Well, you have to understand the whole piece. And somehow, you have to name that. And so we have possible ones like A Neighbor Comes, Heartless Passersby, and so forth. Let's jump down to number 10. Reading between the lines, that's what they called it when I went to school, inferring. So it doesn't actually say this in so many words in the text. And this is the kind of question children don't like, because they say, well, it doesn't say it. We can't find the words there. We'll see some samples a bit later here. And so you could ask questions like, so based on, once the story is finished, were the first two people not neighbors? If not, what was different between them and the person who helped? Or, here's another inference, was the Jericho Road dangerous? Was that a dangerous place to travel? And if a student says yes, what would be your follow-up question? What would you ask that student then? Yes?
Why would you say that?
Yeah, why would you say that? And what should he say? Or what should she say?
I don't know.
What should she say? Do you know what
the
she
said?
Yes. This person got in trouble, right? Yes. And and then the different kind of, how much time is needed for healing? We really don't know that. Now we have to think a little bit more. Well, probably a fair amount of time, because the Samaritan did say, if it costs more than what I left with you, when I come again, I'll give you something. We don't know, but this wasn't just an overnight. This man was beat and left for dead. So it took a while. We don't know just how long. Notice the kind of thinking that calls for. And then distinguishing fact from opinion. If it's really a fact you can pull out of the story, a fact is something that reasonable people don't argue about. So is this a desk? Is there a desk in this room? And on the other hand, if it's an opinion, why, people can be reasonable and still disagree on it. Such as, is it best to start out buying a new car or a used car when you start out in life? Or other. But going back to the story here, are Samaritans better than Israelites? And was Jesus teaching that priests and Levites are not compassionate? Well, what do you think? Was that the point of Jesus' story, to teach that priests and Levites are not compassionate? You say, you don't think that was his point. What do you think, Tom? Was that his point?
What was the point?
Was his point to teach that priests and Levites are not compassionate people?
I didn't hear that again. I'm not hearing it.
Okay. Was his point to teach?
Was his point? Then?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. No. You can't. He did have a point, but because he had this point, that doesn't mean that this other thing over here was also. And then that. What about the all right. Let's go to the next sheet. And here I have, this relates, the methods to develop comprehension. This relates to the list we just looked at. The difference is that the list I gave you first, these 15 things are skills that you want children to develop. And then the next list simply suggests a few specific activities to develop those skills. And so number three, for example, it makes a world of difference if students understand terms. This is true in science, understanding science, history, math, and stories. If the students don't know what a priest is or what a Levite is, or what the listeners would have thought when they heard the word priest and Levite coming by, if to them a priest was just another person. And then Jesus had to say someone, so he, instead of saying a man, he said a priest. You really missed the point of the story. And if they don't know what a Samaritan was. So you need to think about as you, and this is true in if you have devotions with your children, if you're teaching a Bible lesson, if you're teaching a science lesson, they don't understand the term photosynthesis or taxation or representation. Many times, a few key terms really unlock the whole piece. And so be alert to whether or not they understand those terms. Number four here is an activity that I picked up years ago at a workshop somewhere. And it's a very simple activity, but a very valuable one, a very easy one to design. All you do, and you can use this for Bible, history, science, reading, whatever, and anytime you have a body of reading, you pick out two or more words and put them in sets. And you have your students write one sentence per set of words. And the rules are that it must be grammatically correct and it must be true to the piece. So, for example, with the priest and help, you could say, a priest came by but didn't help the injured man. Now, no two students will write the same sentence, and there's no answer key for this. But the interesting thing is, when you read those papers that they pass in, you can check them as fast as you read them, because you know the story and you know immediately whether or not it's correct. And also, It tells you the student's level of comprehension. It also tells you something about their writing ability. Students who, the Samaritan, donkey, inn, and money. The more words you give them, the bigger the group, the more challenging it is. And the further part in the story the words are chosen, the more challenging it is. You can end up with a summary of the whole story. They can use the words in any sequence they want to, any form they want to. Students tend to deal with the words one at a time. So a student might say, a Samaritan came along and put the injured man on his donkey and took him to an inn and gave some money to an innkeeper. He takes the one word, all right, I took care of that, and. Now we look at the next word, take care of that, and. So what you try to train them to do is write these sentences without using the word and. That forces them to use subordinate clauses like a while and when and during and after. And the goal is to write a relatively short, compact sentence and say something like, the Samaritan loaded the man on his donkey, took him to the inn, and gave money to the innkeeper to help him. You can, if you want to make up your own exercise for a piece, you can take a highlighter or a pencil as you read through a story and simply underline some key words. And then take those, put those words on the chalkboard or on a paper in sets of two or three or four. Give them to your students, and right there you have a review activity. Great activity for young children through 12th graders and adults. Excellent activity. You try it yourself, and it forces you to wrestle with the story. At the same time, it develops writing skills. Notice number 7, as you talk about something, as you talk about a story, and I'll just mention here, I've heard a teacher say already, well, we've read the story, now everyone's read it, what is there to do now? I guess we go on to the next story. I would say it's a bit like saying at lunchtime, the cooks have the meal ready, and it's there on the table, well, what is there to do now? Well, what you do is eat it. Eat it. And so when you read a story, it's only after you know that everybody has read it that you're ready to start digesting it. And now you're ready to start talking about it. And so as you discuss something, and I know as well as you that the things I'm talking about here, you don't have time in your schedule to do this with all the stories with all the children all the time. But we're looking at skills here to develop, and when you have these tools in your toolbox, so to speak, you use them when you can, wherever you can, to develop skills. And when you ask questions, notice the different kind of thinking called for by some of these different questions. So, for example, if they know the story of the Good Samaritan, if you read something, how do you know if you read it? Well, you know that if you pronounce all the words and just say them out loud, well, a voice reader can do that. There's computer software can do that. You can lay something under a screen. You can scan it and say it out loud. That's only the beginning part. But if you really have read this, you should know who told the story. The students ought to know that. They should be able to say, Jesus told the story. To whom was it told? It was told to Israelites, wasn't it? To Jewish people. What did the thieves take? That calls for a detail. What about D? Did the man fight back? Occasionally ask a question like that. What does that question require you to do to answer it? What do you say? Did the man fight back?
Read between the lines?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, did he? We don't know, do we? We don't know. Sometimes you want to ask a question that the text does not answer. And your students ought to know that sometimes you will ask that because there are things, when we read things, sometimes there are unanswered questions. Have you noticed that when you read the Bible, it doesn't answer all your questions? It's not always there. And a G there, how would each type of person feel hearing the story? A Jew, a Samaritan, a Roman. And here's where they need to understand the context, but how would a Jewish person feel if he heard that story? Typical Jewish person. Somebody?
Offended.
Offended. What about a Samaritan? How would he feel? Yes.
Good.
Yay, Samaritans. Good for the Samaritans. And what about a Roman hearing this story about these people? Probably just, well, Just people. No big deal. So what? Mm-hmm. And why might the priest have passed by? Now, when you ask a question like this, you preface it by saying, I know that you don't know. Therefore, but I'm asking you to think. So you can't say, I don't know. Because I already know that. But what would be a logical reason? Why might the priest have passed by on the other side?
Priests had ceremonial laws they had followed. Mm-hmm. If a man were dead, he could not have gone to the temple mm-hmm. and finished his course of duty.
He might have been unclean. Mm-hmm. Yes. So that calls for a different kind of thinking. And how about the last one? Why do you suppose the lawyer answered, he that showed mercy, instead of saying, the Samaritan? I mean, the obvious, easy answer is to say, the Samaritan. Why did he answer, he that showed mercy?
He didn't want to give credit to this lower level person.
Isn't that something? He couldn't get that word out of his mouth to say that. What's the value of asking that kind of question to a class? Yeah, you've got to put yourself in his shoes and try to think like he would think. And that's one of the parts of reading comprehension, to try to look at something from somebody else's perspective. And is that an important skill for life? To be able to see things from other people's point of view? And even to empathize with them, to see how they would feel? And notice how you can do this with many different selections. Now, at the bottom of this sheet is an answer key for the green papers, and there's one typographical error I want to point out while we're here. Beside Abe and his dog, number 9, it should be T rather than F. So change that up to a T in case you get to checking these out later. What I'd like to do now is look at a couple of the selections I gave you here, and we'll look at some questions. So let's go to Abe and his dog. This is taken from the COE reader. And notice that I wrote a couple of different kinds of questions here. The LD questions are simply ones that call for literal details. You can pretty much go back in the text and find some words, underline some words, whatever, to prove your answer. And then the inferential ones, you can't. And then the conclusion is where you have to somehow judge things based on your own life experience. And so, for example, number 1. You may not have read it through the whole piece, but this is very early in the piece. Abe and his parents slept in the same room. What do you think? True or false? And why?
There was only one room in the cabin.
All right. Now, should a second grader be able to think that far? Do you think? Mm-hmm. Yes. Now, some won't. Some won't. But what happens if you have a group of students and you ask them that question? They slept in the same room. And they look over there and they say, "I don't. Doesn't say. Doesn't say." All right. So then you ask, and somebody else over here says, "It only had one room, so they had to." What effect might that have on this person over here who said, "Well, it doesn't say"? What's the value of bringing this out in the class?
Well, they might say that maybe Abe could have slept outside.
They might. Right. But... Pardon? But what do they find out when somebody else answers a question?
They either find out that there's stuff that they missed, or else they find out that if they sit still and be quiet, someone else will answer their question.
They could. And what's your goal as a teacher? Why do you want to do this together sometimes as a group?
To show them that they didn't know.
Oh, I could have thought of that too. Sure. Okay. And it's this isn't just stuff in the answer key. This isn't just big teachers that can think like this. My classmate could actually answer that question. I guess maybe I should be able to too. I might have to think a little bit. But you can actually learn how to think by hearing your classmates say something that you realize is not all that complicated. Well, I'll just pick a few out here. What about number 3? The wagon was covered to shield them from the hot sun. What do you say about that? True or false, and why? Why do you say so?
I would say false because the text says it was covered to keep things dry.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So there's kind of the inverse. It is a detail, but yet it's kind of the flip. If that's why it was covered to keep things dry, and so now it's... And this is where you can get some thinking going. Some student will also argue that it probably was covered to shield from the hot sun. And, yes?
It was near the end of winter.
And so...
Mm-hmm.
They didn't.
Clue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they didn't need to do that. Good. And so as you discuss these things, you really are stirring the thinking. What about number four? Since they couldn't take everything with them when they moved, they probably gave some things to their friends before they left. Now, what kind of thinking does that call for? How could you possibly answer that? What would you have to think? What kind of thinking do you have to do? Yes.
Well, a wagon would hold everything that they have in the house, for one thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's said that they had to leave some things behind. Mm-hmm. But the question here is, okay, since they had to leave some things behind, they probably gave some things to some other people. Mm-hmm. What do you think? And you can't say you don't know. Eunice?
I would think they probably did if they had neighbors.
And why do you think that?
They're probably frugal back then.
It's just become sad. See, you have to, here's a case where you have to kind of go by your own life experience. The story doesn't say that. We say, well, they probably didn't just leave it there to rot out in the sun. They probably left it for other people. Probably. We don't know that for sure. And number 12. Abe remembered much more about this trip than his sister did. How can we possibly answer that?
Abe was probably older.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. It was a baby sister at the beginning, so he probably remembered more. Now, notice it isn't important at all that students remember this story, or that they, 10 years later, that they remember that his sister was a baby and he wasn't. That's not the purpose of this kind of question. You're simply developing some thinking skills. Now, You don't want to overdo it. You don't want to burden students with dissecting everything and taking it all apart. They can get tired of it. But I'm pointing out here, in your discussion, in your questioning, you do want a variety of questions. And some pieces lend themselves much quicker than, much more than others do. If you flip your page on the backside here, there's another story called The Golden Windows. Is anybody familiar with this story already, The Golden Windows? I'll just give you a minute. Just scan down through it, because I'd like to discuss a few things. So we'll just be quiet here a minute or two and just scan through the Golden Windows story. All right, let's talk about a few questions here. Number one, this is probably about second, third, fourth grade level somewhere. What are some jobs, and think of that age of children now, whether or not they should be able to answer this. What are some jobs that this boy might have done every day? What does a child have to do to be able to answer that question? How could you possibly answer it when the story doesn't tell you?
You have to imagine himself being in the shoes of this child.
And where is the child?
He's a farm child.
And so, what does a farm child do? Feed calves, pull weeds. Right. Again, we don't know. It doesn't say. But think a little bit. What about if you were with a group of children with no farm background, never been on a farm? Would that be a worthwhile question to ask? I see some head shaking. Yes. Why?
You can talk about a farm.
Mm-hmm. You might have to help them. They might guess, but now they have to imagine what would it be like to live on a farm. So this is a little. Because if the story were the other way around, if this boy were living in India somewhere, why, you could also guess what he might do, and maybe you would know, maybe you wouldn't as a teacher. But anyway, let's go to number two. If the boy's parents had more money, what would they have done, or probably have done? And what do we base that answer on?
And hired a farmer.
Mm-hmm. Because it says what?
It says that they were poor and could not pay up.
Mm-hmm. Right. Here's an example. When you ask a question, it's good sometimes to ask the students, on what do you base your answer? Because especially when it comes to Bible study or anything that you read, you ought to be able to, if you say something, you ought to be able to go to the text and say, I say this because of that, because it says it here or there. Let's go to number five. I'll try something else here. What trouble did the boy have in looking at the windows?
The gold disappeared.
The what?
The gold is something that disappeared before he was ready.
All right.
It's too bright. Made him wink to look at
him. All right. Yes. You're getting picked on because you're close to me. Yes.
I think he had inside struggles. He wanted gold windows too.
Okay. Anybody else? Now, why am I calling on more than one person to answer this?
So we can learn from each other.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's more than one answer.
There's more than one answer. That makes sense. Mm-hmm. And I'll do another bit later for another reason. But that's and you find out here that there's more than one way. There could be more than one reason. And there's a kind of a mixed reason as to why he did this. Yes. What about number eight? Why did the boy almost feel like weeping when he saw the glass windows? He could have wept. Why? What was so painful about looking at windows? Why did I say that?
He was disappointed.
Okay, he was disappointed. I said why was it so painful? Somebody tell me why I said that. Pardon?
Windows have pain.
Very good. I enjoy students like you. That's not why I said it. Why didn't you guess?
Well, weren't his inside struggles hurt?
Maybe, but
seeking earthly value.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was actually just trying to sidetrack you a little bit, but from going after the main thing. But you did well. Yes, his inside feelings were hurt. He was disappointed, and you're showing good at now. Are you giving me adult insight, or would an 8 or 9 or 9 year old get this? What would a 9 year old get? You tell me. Think like a 9 year old now. Would they get this? Should they be able to? Yeah, it's a boy. If he was disappointed at his age, they should be able to understand that. Yes. Let's jump down to number 11. The little boy did not tell the girl what he had learned. So since he didn't tell her, we don't know what he didn't tell her, do we? But what didn't he tell her? What didn't he tell her?
He thought her mind was
his own. All right. He probably didn't tell her that. Now, the next couple questions I have labeled differently. And you probably wouldn't ask it quite this way with third or fourth graders. But somehow you would ask, how does distance affect the way we look at things if we're up close or far away? Or you might have to ask it like this. So when the boy saw his own place from far away, how was it different? Or how did it seem different to him? All right. It looked more special. Now, what's a connecting question now? If you're there, where are you going to step as a teacher? Remember I said the so what and the now what? Somebody, what could you follow this up with? What could you ask your students? Yes.
So was he happier going home than he was when he went?
You might ask that. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Talk about your perception.
Alright. I would also ask them, suppose you backed off from your place. Suppose you could get in a hot air balloon or a plane and back off from your place and see it from a distance, from up there 1,000 feet down, and look down on it. Do you think it would look different than it does? Do you think, would you like to do that? Would you like to see it that way? And they'd probably say yes, wouldn't they? And do you think your garden would look different from a distance than if you're down there real close? Now, you don't overdo this, but a story that's a good story is a good story and doesn't need to be, you don't have to say, get this, because you can spoil the story. But you do want to just suggest enough for them to make the connection. And then 14 and 15, you can kind of do together, and I think children can get this. Now, this boy had a hill that he liked to sit on and look out across the country. Most children have, and before you go too far, you want them to use their imaginations. What are some other kinds of hills that children have? Or do you have a hill? Did any of you, when you were 9, 10, 11 years old, did you have a quote, hill? A special place around home that you like to go or sit or do? Any volunteers? Yes.
Big rock along the river.
Mm-hmm. You like to sit there and watch the river.
Mm-hmm. A tree.
A tree. Many people like to climb a tree and sit in a certain fork of a tree. I like to sit, there's a place out by the wash line. Sometimes in the evening I sit and the dog would lie down beside me, put his paws across my lap. I'd pet him and he would listen to me talk about life. And he never criticized me when I talked to him. All right. So you can make a connection. Yes, all of us had these, well, not all of us, but many people had these places. And you know what? They might make a connection when they're at home or when they go in that tree again, they go to that special place. They just might look at their home with new eyes, with new appreciation. Let's jump back to the hymn, which is on the last, back of the last page. Safe in the Arms of Jesus. Now, here's an opportunity. If you ever sing any songs in school, for devotions, or any music class, don't do this with every song every time, please. Your children will get sick of it. But occasionally, you want to check whether they actually know what they're singing. If you don't understand what you're singing, that's called singing in tongues. It was only about 3 years ago, I'll confess, that I finally figured out the grammar of the one verse of Silent Night. I jotted it up here on the board. I thought, surely, the hymnal editors must have had this wrong. And because the one verse says, Silent night, holy night, Son of God loves, and I always thought of this as a verb, loves with a transitive verb, loves light. And then, this here, this word ought to be radiance. You know, radiance being from that holy face. Right? Did anybody ever think that? Who understands? Who sees why it needs to be radiant? It's correct, by the way. It is correct this way. Why?
Beams is the verb.
Pardon?
Beams is the verb.
Yes. Yes.
God,
that's correct. And this word is... this word actually is defining this. It's kind of poetic license to describe radiantly beams. Less pure light radiant, or radiant light beams from thy holy face. So I finally, a couple years ago, learned to sing this both with the spirit and the understanding. And so, just as I am without one plea, save that thy blood was shed for me. I sang that for years, and you know, plea, request. I'm not hard to please without one plea. And then, you know, I don't come with a whole lot of requests. But then you go to save that thy blood was shed for me. It just didn't quite seem to fit. But it's a nice song, and you sing it anyway. So I wonder whether you understand that. But plea there is a legal term. When you are called into court, you plead guilty, or you plead innocent, or you plead something. And we only have one plea when we come before Christ, and that's His blood. And so you do your students a favor if you help them understand what they're singing. Now, here's some questions based on Safe in the Arms of Jesus. And so we don't have time to go through all these, but I'll pick out some that should not be checked here. And you tell me why any student would ever check it. Look at number 7. The angels are born singing. Why would anybody check that? What does the hymn say?
Angels are born in song.
Yeah, born in a song. Sure, it says they're born in a song. Right? And I don't know how many children sing that and think that they're born in a song. The angels sing, right? So they're certainly not born the way we are. And so maybe they're born singing. Now, that's not what the text says, though. What about number 3? Being in Jesus' arms helped me to live with my doubts. Now, this is based on what the text says, not based on what might be true otherwise, but based on what the text says. Why should we not check number 3? What does it say?
It says free from doubt.
Yes, free from my doubts and fears, so He can take them away. And what about number 13? Being in Jesus' arms causes trials and tears to end, based on the text. Why should you not check that?
Only a few more trials.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there'll be some more. There'll be some more. And then the afterlife is over, they'll be ended. But what I'm suggesting here is simply a good opportunity for a song leader, if you're going to sing a song, pick up maybe a term or just a phrase, maybe just one in verse 2, and point it out to them. Point out, invite the students to explain what it means, and then guess what? When you sing it that day, you'll be singing it with the understanding. And it's amazing how many phrases there are. Of course, we all know when we were children, there were a lot of phrases in that we didn't understand and we learned later. Let's take the moments we have left. Let's go to the top, to the poem here, To a Waterfowl. This is one now for more of a high school level. The poem by William Colin Bryant. And let's look at some of these questions. The poet is likely watching a what? A duck, cat, crow, or pheasant? A duck. And why do you say that? What do you base it on?
It's the only one that's a waterfowl.
All right, it's a waterfowl. He's ready to watch that. What about the time of day? What do you say it is? Morning, night, evening, or midday?
Evening.
Evening. Mm-hmm. And why?
That's the day.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now, I said I would show you something else here. So, for number three, I'll call on somebody, so don't call out the answer. Number three, the bird is what? Landing, alone, in a flock, or large? Volunteer, raise your hand. Somebody else?
Alone. My bigger folks alone.
What do you say?
Alone.
How are you feeling?
Thankful they agree with me.
Thankful they agree with you, yes. Do you want to do this sometimes with your students? When somebody gives a correct answer, just move right on and say, what do you say? And what is she very likely to say? If you say alone, she's very likely to say say what? Mm-hmm. Well, you often a lot of students will say something different. Mm-hmm. Because teachers often don't do that unless that was wrong. But just because you ask somebody else doesn't mean that that was wrong. I mean, you're supposed to be thinking too. Mm-hmm. And if you say alone, well, fine. But you try that with your students and see how quickly. Because what you can do then, you know, if you say alone and then you say something else and you say alone, well, you know, alone was correct. And I didn't suggest that it wasn't. I just want to hear some more people affirm it. It's simply a way of having your students focus on the topic and not try to guess from you. You know, they're very smart at taking cues from you and saying what they think you want to have them say rather than actually thinking about the topic. Let's go to number five. This takes a different kind of thinking. Assuming that we're in the northern hemisphere, the bird is heading for the northwest, east, or south. Anybody, just call it out. Yes.
He's flying east. Flying from sunset.
North.
Okay. This is interesting. Okay, we got three of them now. Does somebody want to try west yet?
There's a case to be made for west. Because he's showing up against the sunset.
Soon I shall find his summer home.
Yes, yeah. The bird is wending his way north because he's going to soon build a nest. And birds go north in the summer to build their nests. All right. Let's look at number eight yet. A fan, as used in stanza five, means what? Cooled, beat, stirred, or blown. All of them are synonyms for fan in certain settings, but which one fits best here? Anybody?
Beep.
Beep, probably, yes. And actually, we do want to do 10 yet. Scream among thy fellows. Is this referring to fear, pain, anger, or contentment in the poem?
Contentment.
Yes. We don't usually think of screaming with contentment, do we? But in this case, it's a bird and the duck and they scream. All right. The other selections are some for you to just look at. They show samples of finding the main idea or details. And our goal as teachers is to help our children think. And you know what? This is actually fun. It's actually fun for students to do this kind of thing. And you don't overdo it, but you do it in various subject areas, wherever you are. You can also train them to ask some questions too. You can invite them to ask you questions.
For more free resources that support teaching and learning, visit thedocforlearning.org.